Luke chapter 6. It's one of several versions from the different Gospels of an encounter Jesus has regarding the Sabbath. And this seems to happen often, Jesus having Sabbath encounters. So hear this one, as recorded in Luke today. Now one Sabbath, while Jesus was going through the grain fields, his disciples plucked some heads of grain and rubbed them in their hands and ate them. But some of the Pharisees said, "Why are you doing what is not lawful on the Sabbath?" Jesus answered, "Have you not read what David did when he and his companions were hungry? He entered the house of God and took and ate the bread of the presence." This was a big deal, by the way, just in case. "Which it is not lawful for any but the priests to eat. And he gave some to his companions." And then he said to them this mysterious phrase, "The Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath." A little while later, on another Sabbath, he entered the synagogue and taught, and there was a man there whose right hand was withered. And the scribes and the Pharisees watched him, that is, Jesus, to see whether he would cure on the Sabbath, so that they might find an accusation against him. And even though he knew what they were thinking, he said to the man who had the withered hand, "Come and stand here." So he got up and stood there. And then Jesus said to them, "I ask you, is it lawful to do good or to do harm on the Sabbath? To save life or destroy it?" After looking around at all of them, he said to him, "Stretch out your hand." And he did so, and his hand was restored. But they were filled with fury and discussed with one another what they might do to Jesus. Friends, this is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. I was thinking, as I was planning, looking ahead, saying, what should we study in the coming months? Back in the end of December, I was contemplating all that, and it struck me, you know, Jill, our other pastor here, is gone for the month of January because her husband is taking a sabbatical. And I thought, you know, sabbatical is kind of almost a foreign idea anymore. So I thought, maybe we need to explore a little bit of what is a sabbatical and where's that coming from? And how does that impact us? And what does it have to do with us in these days? So that got me thinking a lot about Sabbath and how much Jesus seemed to have this interaction and interplay with the religious authorities of the day, struggling with what was going on the Sabbath and then what Jesus would do on the Sabbath. That seemed to be a tension point. And in fact, in this particular encounter in Mark and Matthew's Gospels, when they talk about it, they don't just say that the authorities were sort of trying to figure out what to do with him. They said they began to plot to kill him at this point. So this is serious business. So I want to explore this idea of the Sabbath for the next few weeks. And we're going to call the series Recovering the Sabbath, Restoring Our Soul, because it's actually pretty central to the Christian life, and in fact to human life. It's how we're wired. And we're going to look at that. But has anybody ever been able to take a sabbatical, by the way? Nope. Oh, you did. Yay. Way to go. Was there another over here? No, all right, yeah. Sabbatical, it's kind of a foreign concept nowadays. It's been around for a long time, and most often now we tend to only hear about people taking sabbaticals in the church or in academia. And it goes on a rhythm. 6 years, you teach or preach, you do the work that you do, and then there's a season of rest. And sometimes in the academic circles, it's a year. But it's not necessarily really a year of rest. Often in academic circles, it's a year of study and research and writing. In the church circles, it sometimes gets to be 3 months. So that's what Jill's husband is doing. He's had 6 years serving at First Press Libertyville, and now he's taking 3 months of rest, sabbatical. And it comes straight from from our scriptures. This rhythm, 6 and 1. And I want to help us explore it today, and just to get us started in it and thinking about it and why it's important, I want to take us into an old movie. You know me, I love movies. So if there's ever a movie clip that's going to make sense and connect to it, I want to show it. And the clip we're going to see, which I think is only going to be on this side now, I think we our projector's out over here now. Yeah, okay. This is a film from many years back called A River Runs Through It. Who's familiar? Anybody? Saw this one? Okay. It was out a long time ago. It's a great film, kind of a quiet film. It centers around the family, a Presbyterian family, if you will, a Presbyterian minister, wife, and two sons, growing up in Montana. And they are fishermen, fly fishermen. And after this movie came out, sales in fly fishing equipment soared, right? Because it made you yearn to fly fish, whether you ever wanted to fish or not. It was beautiful and graceful that way. And I want to show you the beginning of the film, in part because it sort of sets the tone for what we're talking about with Sabbath. So take a look.
My father was a Presbyterian minister and a fly fisherman.
There is one yonder.
And though it is true that one day a week was given over wholly to religion, even then he told us about Christ's disciples being fishermen. And we were left to assume, as my younger brother Paul and I did, that all first-class fishermen on the Sea of Galilee were fly fishermen, and that John, the favorite, was a dry fly fisherman.
The poor without Christ are of all men the most miserable. But the poor with Christ are princes and kings of the earth.
In the afternoon, we would walk with him while he unwound between services. He almost always chose a path along the Big Blackfoot, which we considered our family river. And it was there he felt his soul restored and his imagination stirred.
Long ago, rain fell on mud and became rock. 500 million years ago. But even before that, beneath the rocks, are the words of God. Listen.
And if Paul and I listened very carefully, all our lives, we might hear those words. Even so, Paul and I probably received as many hours of instruction in fly fishing as we did in all other spiritual matters. As a Presbyterian, my father believed that man by nature was a damn mess, and that only by picking up God's rhythms were we able to regain power and beauty.
10 and 2.
To him, all good things, trout as well as eternal salvation, come by grace, and grace comes by art, and art does not come easy.
Norman?
Well, that's just the beginning of the film, so if you'd like to see the rest sometime, pick it up, it's worth watching. The struggles of family and life. But did you hear the rhythm and the Presbyterian mindset? As Presbyterians, indeed, Calvinists at our core, at our history, There is a basic belief, yes, we were created good, but now, after sin, we are just sort of a damn mess. And it is only when we get back into the rhythms of God that we are restored. Restored into the ways of God. And what they're really talking about in the rhythms of God is this thing called Sabbath. Now, I don't know about you, for me, I've shared before, I didn't grow up in the church. It really came to faith as a high school kid. So I don't have as much history in this as some do. But I know, having listened to some others, there were those days not that long ago here in America when the Sabbath, or as we would think of it, pretty much Sunday, was a day when people kept a pretty strict rule to life. When in fact, No businesses were open, right? Anybody remember those days? I mean, I don't. Sorry, I don't go back that far. But, right. But some do, yes. Thank you. You remember those days when there was no businesses open. And the only thing open pretty much was church and the hospital. You needed to get there. Right? And generally, most folks sort of had a rhythm, taking that day to rest, and go to church and such. But then there was also that sort of dark side, negative side, if you will, of Sunday, right? It was all the things you don't do on Sunday. Some of you remember this. I know having spoken to some folks with a little further history than my own, they talk about the don'ts of Sunday, right? You don't do chores, don't do laundry, you don't mow the grass, right? What else did you not do on Sundays? What was not allowed? Don't buy a car. Don't go buy a mirror. Oh, buy beer. Sorry. That was really my bad hearing there. No, don't. Yeah, you don't buy beer. Absolutely. No alcohol. All right. What else did you not do on Sunday? You didn't get to play with friends. All right. Somehow that was work of some kind. It was frowned upon. Yeah. I remember talking to one friend who they said, well, you know, and you shouldn't even, you know, like play cards on Sunday, but they did, and so they would make sure to close the curtains so the neighbors wouldn't see, right? Yeah, I mean, it was just a weird tension. Like here's all the things you shouldn't do on this day, and in fact, it's not uncommon. By the first century, when Jesus shows up, they have hundreds of things that they've spelled out to say, this is what you don't do on the Sabbath. Because so often this is what happens. Whether it's in religious form or somewhere else, we have a rule, a commandment, an idea, something, and it has good purpose and meaning and value. And then over time, we want to keep sort of delineating and marking it and sort of drawing the boundaries, so then we keep creating more and more rules. In the ancient world, the idea of the Sabbath, this is what God gave to the Hebrew people. They came out of Egypt, and they needed a new way to live. And he gave them this Sabbath, this idea of a day of rest, a day set apart. It's 6 days work, and one day, no, cease, stop. Nobody else in the ancient world did this. In fact, the Greeks in those days looked at the Hebrew people and thought, this is such a lazy people. What is this one day in seven that they don't work? They have these holy days, or now we call them holidays, right? That's where that comes from. So this ancient practice started thousands of years ago, and over thousands of years created more rules about it all, and so the legalism grew up, and it lost its purpose. I think that's why Jesus had so much tension with the religious authorities of the day, as they kept watching him on the Sabbath, because they had the rules set. These are the boundaries. These are the things you do and do not do on the Sabbath. And they kept watching him, kept challenging him. Wondering, when will he step past it? And the funny thing is, Jesus knows all about this, and yet he keeps stepping on those toes, right? He keeps challenging it. I think because it's pretty clear they've lost sight of what the Sabbath was all about. So here they are again, the disciples walking through a field, picking some grain to eat. Doesn't seem like the worst thing to do, to eat, right? You're at least allowed to eat on the Sabbath, right? I hope. Yeah, sure. But taking grain, rubbing it from the husk and such, that's work. You can't do that. And yet they're eating, sustaining life, and yet the Pharisees are very upset. No, you can't do this. Jesus, this isn't right. Now, doesn't it seem odd? just trying to picture the scene. Jesus and his disciples are kind of cruising through a field. They do this, and then the Pharisees bring up this question. Are the Pharisees there too? They're walking with Jesus. This must be a much larger crowd than I envisioned, because I always just sort of assumed it was Jesus and his buddies. But I think it was this larger crowd that was following them so often. And they bring up this dispute. And Jesus gives them the example of David. Well, don't you remember David? Who's David? Well, he's our greatest king of our history, so he's kind of an important guy. All right, what did he do? Well, turns out he and his buddies were hungry. They broke into the temple. Took the bread of the presence, holy, sanctified, kept separate from everybody else. Only the high priest got to deal with that. And they ate the bread. And God didn't smite them down. They survived. And in fact, this is before David's even king. And then David gets raised up as king. So Jesus is sort of tossing some of the history back in the Pharisees' face and saying, look, if this was so important, don't you think God would have done something about that then? But instead he didn't. Instead, David survived and his men. Because maybe something like eating, surviving, life is what the Sabbath is all about. Maybe. But for the Pharisees, it was just about the rules and the regulations. And for us, I wonder where we are about Sabbath these days. What I hear often is this lament that we've lost it. Right? We've lost that popular place that we used to have in culture that at least allowed for it. We've lost the sense that Sunday is just set apart as a holy day, as a special day. Now, you can go just about anywhere and buy anything, beer or mirrors, depending on my hearing. Buy a car. Some dealerships, no. You can online. You betcha. You can still buy a car online now. You can buy anything on a Sunday. These days, you can go just about anywhere on a Sunday, except for Chick-fil-A, Hobby Lobby, a few other Christian organizations, and some. I'm going to go into Saturday, some other Hebrew businesses that keep Sabbath on Saturday. But for the most part, we've lost it as a culture. And what do I hear? I hear us, and I'm there with you. I hear the lament of our souls. Oh, do you remember when? Remember when we didn't have to battle between soccer and church, right? Or football? I mean, kids' sports is one of the key laments I hear, and experience, right? Myself as well, and wrestle with, oh, what do we do with that? Among all the other laments, we've lost that rhythm in America. And it was unavoidable. It was going to happen at some point. But we look back and go, oh, that was such a gift when the whole culture lived with us in that. Whether they went to church and really understood and experienced Sabbath or not, at least we all had the space for it. And that's why I want to get us back to exploring the Sabbath and what it's all about and why it's there and why it's not about the rules and what you do and do not do on the Sabbath, but at the heart of it, what it's there for. It is a gift. It's a gift given by God, and God sharing with us. This is how we're made. This is built into us. Now, we heard from the Gospel of Luke in that Sabbath encounter. I want to take us all the way back to Genesis, the end of chapter 1, beginning of chapter 2, just for a minute. Because this is really where we hear about the Sabbath for the first point. You know the rhythm. Creation story, Genesis 1. God said, let there be. And there's light. And there's water, and there's the firmaments and the heavens, and there, and all along it goes day one, day two, day three, day four, day five, day six. And then it wraps up. Here's where it wraps up. Thus the heavens and the earth were finished and all their multitude. And on the seventh day, God finished the work that he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all the work that he had done. So God blessed the seventh day and hallowed it, because on it God rested from all the work that he had done in creation. Did you hear that? On the seventh day, it's an interesting phrase, God finished the work and rested. If the work was finished on day six, why didn't it just say, on day seven, God rested? See, I think there's a, I think the writer here is being very intentional to say what we see in the rhythm of creation is all that work culminates with the rest. There's the 6 days of creation and all the work that goes into it, and it is finished on day seven with rest. That's the rhythm of God, the creative process of God. And it's built into the creation, and it's built into us. 6 days, the work, the toil, the labor, the creativity, the process, it's all happening. And then day seven, the rest. And without it, the work actually isn't really done completely, isn't really finished. But the rest is a part of the rhythm. Here's how I was thinking about it earlier this week. When I was a kid, I loved Legos. Anybody else a Lego fan growing up? Lego maniac, perhaps? Yes, awesome. Thank you, Legos. Woo. Whatever you love to do as a kid, think about this. So with Legos, you know, you put the kit together, and so first get a new one and go, woo, put the kit together. Here's what's it say on the box. Make that one. Okay. Awesome. And then of course, once it's complete, then play with it, all right? Enjoy it, celebrate it, go, woo! All right, if I made a plane, let's play with our plane, all right? Dog fights, all kind of thing, right? And then after enjoying it, celebrating it, getting to play with it, then say, oh, all right, well, now I'm gonna build something else with it and create anew. That seems like a pretty normal, understood rhythm of what you might do with a toy. That seems like a right rhythm. But imagine if instead, as an eight-year-old, I'm building my Legos, and I create that plane. That's interesting. All right, tear it apart, build a new something. Okay, tear it apart, build something else. Tear it apart, build something else. See, that's a rhythm where there is no rest. There is no celebration. There's no taking stock of what took place. And I think that's a part of the rhythm of God. The 6 days of creation, all this creative, amazing things have happened, and then God steps back. God didn't need to rest, really. But to complete the work is to celebrate it, to evaluate it, to revel in it, and to go, oh, it is good. And we cheat ourselves when we don't enjoy that rhythm for our lives. And if there's ever a time in our history as a people when we have stopped living into that kind of rhythm, it's these days. When work doesn't stop when we leave the school or the office or the plant or the home, right? How many of us right now have a cell phone in our pocket that's buzzed a few times because work is sending us messages, emails, texts? Yeah, I thank you for being honest. Appreciate it. Yeah. Right? It is hard to shut it off. And when we don't, it cripples us. It injures us. It damages us because we're not living into that rhythm we've been designed for. And this isn't about heaping guilt on us because, oh, we're workaholics. Yeah, most of us are. It's the culture we live in. That somehow if we're not busy, something's wrong. Right? But it's not healthy. God said, I've come that you might have life and have it more abundantly, that you would thrive. He gave us some handles on how to do it, and part of it is to live into the rhythm of the Sabbath. I told the kids the word, the Hebrew word. Did you remember it? Shabbat. It's a good word. Hebrew words are great. When you hear Hebrew words, you just know it because they've got this sort of guttural sound to them. They're not angry. They're just really earthy. Shabbat. Can we say it together? One, two, three. Shabbat. Yeah. That's a weighty word, isn't it? It's a heavy word. Its literal meaning is to cease. Just to stop. There's a lot more to it, obviously, as we're going to unpack that over the next few weeks. But for now, just to start to play with Shabbat. What does it mean to live into the rhythms of God, the rhythms of 6 days to work and one day to cease? It's a gift. It's a gift that's been used as a weapon. The Pharisees were using it as a weapon. They were clubbing people with all the ways that they were doing it wrong, heaping guilt upon them, and they were missing the point. It was a gift given for life, not a weapon, not an obligation, not a duty, not a burden, but that's so much of what it became. I want to explore it as the gift it is in these next few weeks so that we can indeed recover our souls. Well, gracious God, we know we struggle with this in this 24/7, 365 world. It is always on, always go, always do. And yet you built a different rhythm into us, Lord. So help us to attune ourselves to that rhythm little by little, oh God. Help us to explore that rhythm in the next few weeks. And even just this week, Lord, help us to notice the rhythms day by day in our life that help us to thrive and the ones that drain us. You're telling us something there. So keep us attentive, O Lord, we ask this day. In Jesus' name, amen.